This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's happening? Tinky and Tierney ready to go. How are you today? Rocket Mortgage, our studios. That's where we're hanging out. Rocket Mortgage giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today. Just go to rocketmortgagesquares.com. So, we obviously have a lot to do. We'll start with the championship from last night. Kyrie Irving drama bleeding into yet another week. Tink, what's happening, buddy? How you doing today?
Oh, it's good. Trying to figure out what the heck Jeffrey Lurie's talking about.
Why are you guys having I was just talking to D-Cell about this down the line. Why are you guys having such a rough time interpreting what he said?
Because it doesn't make sense.
Makes total sense.
Forward. Look, we should play it because people won't know what we're talking about. We'll get to what we need to start with. But this is bothering me.
I can tell.
This is Jeffrey Lurie talking after the firing of Doug Peterson. I guess trying to explain what went into the decision. Here we go.
I would say strategic mistakes. They were made in the name of trying to hold the band together, kind of bring back the band together. There was a lot of short-term decision-making and allocation of resources that gave us probably a slightly better chance to go back to the Super Bowl in 2018 and 2019.
Okay.
I'm waiting for, what's next?
Well, first of all, I think
it just stops.
First of all, I think whoever cut the cut out the rest of his sentence.
Yeah, because that's what I'm waiting for.
I don't think that's how he ended it. I think what he said was, and as I deduce, he probably said something like, first of all, what he's saying is, hey, we tried to run it back once more, probably took some chances we shouldn't have taken. In hindsight, we got burned. And I think he was getting prepared to say, based on what we did, it gave us a better bridge, theoretically, to win another Super Bowl in 2018 and 2019.
Yeah,
but here we are. It didn't work out, and we were four wins, and we got a new coach coming. That's what he's saying.
It's still a very complicated way of saying Doug Peterson screwed up, and he mismanaged how he coached and handled the Carson Wentz to Jalen Hurts situation, and then had horrible optics in week 17 of the regular season, and therefore we had to move on from him.
That's what he should have said.
Well, speaking, by the way, and we'll definitely get to this coming up a little later, speaking of Jalen Hurts, a very interesting phone rang yesterday, apparently, to maybe entice, persuade, coerce someone to come and coach somebody that he's coached before.
It sounds familiar. College coaches coaching guys that they kind of know from college. Makes sense.
Yep. We saw that in Arizona. We could see it in Philly. But those are many stories we'll hit today. We got a busy show. The Irving stuff really is getting worse, or it's just getting less and less clear as every day goes on. He's not playing the next couple of games, ruled out at least for the next basically half a week or so. What morphed into, in the eyes of some, one game at just not being mentally ready to play is now, I should say, morphing into something much bigger. And now there's video surfacing. Apparently Kyrie was out having a good time. Granted, it was his family, but he was still there. And now there's the issue of when he comes back, if he comes back, because I'm not so sure he's going to ever play again. I don't know.
I agree. I'm starting to think that, BT.
But if he ever comes back, now you have to wonder about, based on the NBA's protocol, how much longer will he have to sit out? The Nets, and all the while, their general manager, haven't heard a peep from, who I think is a really good early, young GM. I think Sean Marks done a nice job distinguishing himself, but the Nets are a train wreck right now, and we'll get to them later. The game last night, you know, Teague, the way it went down with Sermon getting hurt right away, one carry, done. And I know his replacement actually played pretty well, but
yeah,
that changed a lot of their dynamic. We talked about Justin Fields having to be great, much like he was against Clemson, almost an absolute replication. That didn't happen. He was good. He's okay.
That's exactly right.
Well, you and I were texting, and there was the one sequence, I guess that would have been the second quarter, when he overshot somebody in the, it may have been Olave, I forget who it was, in the corner of the end zone, which is a pass you simply have to connect on. He threw it out of bounds. The next play, he threw it into traffic, almost picked off. He didn't play terrible, certainly didn't play very well. Bottom line is this: Alabama's a machine. If they play 10 times and both teams are totally healthy, I believe Bama's going to win 8. Maybe they win 9. and Ohio State's a power program themselves. That's just how good Alabama is.
Yeah, look, this Bama squad, and we've been saying it all year long, because I went to a couple and did a couple of those games. I came back every time. I said, I don't know who beats this team ever.
And, yeah.
I mean, they might compete with the Jets this season, be honest with you, because of the talent. I'm joking with that, obviously. But the talent on this team is just, I know, right? It was just ridiculous. And more importantly, they didn't make mistakes. There was one mistake in this game. Mac Jones, you know, trying to be a hero, escaping a blitz, which he's just not the athlete to do. You also wrote me on that and said, dude, he can't get away from nobody.
Looked really slow. like the recognition and just the way he turned his body.
Yeah, right.
Now, we had some other runs where he made it, but he looked slow turning. Like, he looked like me turning away from that, basically.
But as soon as he made that mistake, in my mind, I'm like, this kid is going to play perfect for the rest of the game, because that's just who he is. That's just who Mac Jones is. I don't know what kind of pro he's going to be. Probably a great backup somewhere. Maybe AJ McCarron type of player. I don't know if he's athletic enough in today's NFL to be a stud, but he was a stud, BT, all season long.
Yeah.
And after the game, he said something that caught people like a little off guard because of what we witnessed last year with Joe Burrow having one of the greatest, if not the greatest season, probably the greatest for a player in college football. But Mac Jones wasn't talking about himself or his teammates. He was talking about him hit the team, and he might be right.
I think we're the best team to ever play. I mean, there's no team that will ever play SEC schedule like that again, but at the same time, we're just so happy to have won this game and kind of put the icing on the cake. You know, there was not a lot of pressure. We just wanted to go out there and play the game that we've been playing since we were all 5 years old, so we did that really well.
And they did, BT. Mm. And, I mean, there's some merit to what he's saying, BT. When you look at, you know, three of the top five Heisman finalists were on this offense. Now, defensively, yeah, they were compromised a little bit. And they weren't as talented as, you know, some of the elite defenses over the history of college football. But as a team, offense, defense, balance, special teams, you have your best player returning kickoffs and punts in Devontae Smith. I mean, this team is one of the best that I've ever seen, because this national championship game, BT, last night, it looked easy for them.
It did.
Ohio State had no chance to stop them on any drive until they stopped themselves. That was the only way that they weren't scoring on every single drive. And Ohio State's not a bad team.
No, they're not. I mean, they've got a lot of pros out there. 621 yards total to 341. I mean, huge disparity. 33 first downs to 19. They just cut through them, and they really did whatever they wanted. And you know, the one thing I didn't love seeing, now, I would never say he was playing it up for the cameras, but I did not love seeing Jalen Waddle out there hobbling around. I know, and by the way, I know he wasn't out there a ton. And his first play that he came in, it was a little shovel pass, got the first down, then he went right out of the game.
Yep.
And I love the fact that he wanted to play, and I love the fact, because you just don't see this. It's the exact opposite nowadays. And I get it. I'm not throwing shade at young men who aren't going to risk, you know, $20, $30 million for, in essence, a meaningless game in terms of your earning power, not meaningless in terms of your legacy in college and, you know, going to battle with the boys that you went to battle with every day. I don't mean that.
Yeah.
But part of me loved it, and part of me was cringing every time I saw him.
I agree.
Hobbling.
I agree.
Visibly hobbling.
Yeah, that play that you were talking about, it was a third down play. I mean, we knew that they were going to probably go for it on fourth if they didn't get it. Mac Jones probably could have ran and got it himself. But he did the right thing. He was like, dude, why am I going to take the hit? Let me shovel this to Jalen Waddle, who looked perfectly fine running across the field. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you see him start to catch himself.
Yeah.
Like, trying to, you know, and you know that ankle was still bothering him. And you saw this explode over social media. Like, why does this kid need to play right now? He doesn't. They don't need him to win this football game. But I understand him wanting to be, you know, there for his teammates and partake in this national championship team. I think by that point, they could kind of feel the momentum fully on their side.
Yep.
He wanted to be a part of it, not dissimilar to their center, Landon Dickinson,
yep,
who came in and took a snap as they were kneeling down at the end. And he's got a torn up knee, and he was fully dressed for the coin toss. He took the last couple of snaps. I think that was awesome and classy by Saban to get him in there, because obviously he's been an anchor for that team for many years now. But here's one thing worth noting, and this is a testament to Nick Saban, BT.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these studs in college football, you see them for a couple years, they're like, all right, I'm out, I'm going to get paid. The stars on this team, Devontae Smith, Mac Jones is, I think, maybe he's the exclusion because he's got one more year. Mm-hmm. But Mac Jones, Devontae Smith, Landon Dickinson, Alex Leatherwood, Najee Harris, all fourth-year guys, man. They all stayed. No, they probably could have left. Who knows where they would have gotten drafted?
Well, Mac Jones made a lot of money this year, but the other guys, they could have left.
They
prime
maybe,
draft targets.
Maybe they're not first round picks, but they're in the league and they're playing and they're contributing.
Yeah.
They all stayed for their fourth years and got this next title for them, because they obviously won one as freshmen as well. So, I mean, that's a testament to Nick Saban being able to keep your guys. Obviously, it's one thing to recruit. We talk about that all the time for head coaches. It's probably easy for Nick Saban at this point. Hey, come to us. You're going to win a national championship. I guarantee it. Because he wins every other year, at least statistically. But to keep the guys around, that's hard to do. And that's why this team is so hard to beat on any given week.
They're just they're a gift. They're a gift. They're one of those gifts. You know, it's funny, like you look at some of the old grainy footage, whether it's, you know, Wooden's Bruins, you know, things of the past before we were born, even when we were young, and, you know, people younger than us, they see it now. They're like, oh, wow, that, you know, even like maybe Leitner. I mean, if you're really young, you see Leitner, Bobby Hurley at Duke with Coach K, when Coach K was not the first time they lost to UNLV, the second time when they came back and they won. And just one of the great teams of all time, or UNLV. You know, you look at these snapshots of greatness across the collegiate landscape. And, you know, we tend to, the way we are nowadays, we tend to certainly enjoy it. I know I had a great time watching that game last night, especially when you lay the 8.5 points and maybe double back down in the second half and you lay 6.5 points. I'm just saying, I really enjoyed it. But I really enjoyed it. But I do think that there's a lot of people out there that, okay, boom, on to the next. Like they process it for a second, and then they somehow place priority on other stuff, which I get. But in the meantime, maybe unintentionally, you know, weaken the potency of what we just have had the pleasure to watch.
That's right.
I mean, with Alabama, with Nick Saban, and the inevitable comparisons to Belichick. I mean, it's no longer a conversation. Is Nick Saban the greatest college football coach of all time? I don't want to waste anybody's time. That's ridiculous. But can you now branch out here, Teak, and maybe position Nick versus Bill and or Lombardi as the greatest coach?
Yeah.
Just plain coach
of all time. It's very different, BT, and I think it's harder in the NFL simply because there's professionals that you're playing against on a week-in and week-out basis, right? Mm-hmm. In college, you could play some teams like Mississippi State or whatever it may be that they're just inferior, and you know that you're going to, you know, trounce over them. It's not the challenge that you're getting on a nationals, you know, a championship-type stage. Whereas in the NFL, I mean, those guys are paid on the other side as well, and they're the elite of the elite. They may not be good as a team, but they're elite players. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the NFL. But from a perspective of a college a coach interacting with men, motivating them, having the right message. And when you listen to Greg McElroy, who was talking about this after the game, you know, why is Saban smiling? And they said, well, because Saban knows exactly what to give his players. When they're getting too high of themselves, he's reaming them, right? When they're getting, when they feel low and stressed and out, they're like, yeah, we're good. Like he knows how to like ebb and flow with his team.
And but wouldn't most coaches, and I don't think so, isn't that a pretty basic
I really don't think so. I think sometimes coaches get caught in their method.
Okay.
Right? You know, think of a method actor. Like you get caught in this method and it's
like Christian Bale snapping on the poor sound technician.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Because he's caught in character. But you're joking, but seriously. And so it just becomes who they are and they never deviate from that. In fact, Coach Coughlin was like that with the New York Giants for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually he evolved a little bit and I think it made him a better coach and obviously won championships. But you know, you get caught in your method, you can't get out of it, then you sometimes lose the connection with your team. But I think the great ones, and Nick Saban has become this, he knows how to give and take with his guys, and that's why they all love him. And, you know, obviously because they also going to win championships, but he knows what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a conversation. It's hard because it is truly, you know, apples and bananas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
But it's worth having that conversation. He actually, you know, because he got compared, he's getting compared now to Bear Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually talked about this as well after the game. And I think he gives the right
reference. This is a great answer.
It's a great answer.
Great answer.
Because he could claim it, but he says it the right way.
I think Coach Bryant is, you know, sort of in a class of his own in terms of what he was able to accomplish, what his record is. And, I mean, he's the one that made Alabama and the tradition at Alabama a place where lots of players wanted to come.
Yeah,
perfect.
And you know why it also applies? Because when Bear Bryant was there, it wasn't as accepting to have, you know, mixed race teams in football.
And oh, yeah.
He was one of the pioneers. Like, you're welcome here. Yes, we're in the deep South. And yes, there is bigotry all around us, but come here, we're going to build champions. And that's why Bear Bryant is revered, even if Coach Saban has more championships.
And he does.
Ultimately does, has more championships than him.
He's got seven. Listen, he's got the two seasons with Miami. And again, it's almost a fruitless endeavor. It's fun, but you'll never get an answer, at least not a definitive answer that appeases everybody, because there's no mathematical equation that you could really truly point to and say, okay, this discernibly makes, you know, Belichick better or Saban better as a coach, not as a college or just as a coach. The one thing that I would love an answer to, and again, we'll never get it, after the 2 years in Miami, you know, he made the decision to go and trade for Dante Culpepper. And I know you remember this.
Yep.
And in doing so, he willingly let Drew Brees walk out the door. You know, I think it's highly unrealistic to think that Saban would have had the same rapport / results with Brees that Sean Payton has.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that that's unfair to Sean Payton.
Yeah.
And it's also unfair to Drew Brees. But the one thing I'll say about the college game versus the pro, and I guess this is where I further genuflect to Belichick. Like, if I had to answer this question, even though there's really no right or wrong answer, I'd say in college, there's fewer checkpoints, and there's fewer regular season games, there's fewer playoff games, and there's just fewer times that you can stumble.
That's right.
And when you do that year in and year out, encompassing 17 weeks and 16 games, you'll have a couple of teams who are 2-14 and 3-13, but as Tiki said, there's not this deficiency in talent like you get from the top team at a college conference to the bottom team at a college conference.
Yeah, that's right.
I still think it's Belichick, but boy,
I think
Saban
you're right.
Is just phenomenal.
I think you're right. But here's the other thing about Belichick. Well, because you know they obviously were on the same staff at one point, but Nick Saban used to be locked into his mindset, into his methodology, how he wanted to play, how he wanted his teams to look. He's evolved.
He has.
He's evolved. And you heard that a lot on the broadcast last night, how he's not only – I mean, he won his early championships by mastering old-school football, running the rock, playing great defense.
They were pretty boring, to be honest with you.
Very boring.
Pretty boring.
Very boring.
I didn't love watching Bama.
It was hard to watch them play. It really was. It's like, all right – you're going to get 5 yards and, you know, you're going to
five play action.
Yeah, you're going to go 80 yards, 5 yards at a time. That's literally what they did.
It'll take us 9 minutes. Eventually we'll score, but it's going to take us 9 minutes.
Exactly. We're going to win 21-17, right? Because that's how we win national championships. But now it's like, all right, how many points can we score?
I mean, they can throw 60 on you like that.
He evolved, and you got to give him credit for that.
That's a great point.
He saw it, and not only did he evolve, he mastered it. He mastered the evolution, which is – I mean, that's the biggest testament to Nick Saban, I believe.
So congrats to Bama, and really congrats to everybody involved. How we got through, listen, it's a unique season. It wasn't a perfect season.
That's a great point.
But how we even got to last night to sit on our couches and watch a national championship was nothing short of amazing. So a hearty salute to all the men and women who worked their behinds off to just behind the scenes. They'll get no glory, so we'll give you some glory on the show without those men and women doing what they had to do on a day-to-day basis with no cameras and no recognition, no props. Awesome. And, you know, a great season. And here we are. Eventually we'll get to the free agency. Well, that's, I mean, the NFL, but we'll get to the draft. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that aspect coming up next because there's two very interesting things coming out of last night. Justin Fields, all right, we positioned him going into the game against Clemson. Then some had to reposition him after the Clemson game. Where is he now? And can you justify taking DeVonta Smith at number two? Can you do that at number two? We'll have that discussion coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Inbounds, out of bounds, coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Here's what we have after that. We got Kyrie and the Nets at 4 Eastern. So next hour, top of the hour, we'll get to that. We've got Eric Bieniemy. Could he get shut out again? You know, I don't know that it's likely, but if you look at the scenarios and you actually look at what Bieniemy himself has intimated, there's no guarantee he's coaching an NFL team next year as the head coach. 5 Eastern, the Eagles pursuing Lincoln Riley, reaching out to him. So we got a lot of really interesting stuff, including this from last night as we unpack the actual game. Now we get into the stuff that this applies to all NFL fans, at least those fans that have access to the top of the draft board. Justin Fields, DeVonta Smith. Why don't you tackle these both first here, T? Let me just let everybody know, CBSSports.com has Justin Fields going 12th overall.
Ooh, really?
Yep, this morning they updated. It doesn't mean they're right, but it just, you know, the general line of what scouts and what people are thinking. That would be the 49ers. Todd McShay has Justin Fields going 15th. He's got Zach Wilson rated ahead of him and has for a while. The one thing with both of these, at least with McShay, there's no trades, and there's going to be trades, so take that into account. But these are two really interesting draft evaluations. Let's start with the quarterback, Justin Fields, T.
Yeah, Justin Fields is interesting, BT, because you know he has all the physical traits. Now, a lot of people will point to the successes of non-polished NFL quarterbacks or college quarterbacks making the transition to the NFL, like Josh Allen up in Buffalo, and look where he is right now. You could even say Lamar Jackson, even though he hasn't really evolved. He was drafted because he was an elite athlete. Now, that was at the end of the first round, but a lot of people thought Lamar Jackson had no chance to be in the first round, and Ozzie Newsome, you know, correctly identified him as a difference maker for Baltimore, and we see where that is. But it wasn't because he was an elite passer in college. Justin Fields is not an elite passer in college. He just isn't. He is an elite athlete and has the skills to become that in the NFL. Mm-hmm. To me, that keeps him at the top of the draft. I don't see him falling all the way down to 15 to the New England Patriots.
I agree.
I think it at worst, he's going 4 to Atlanta, Falcons. To the Atlanta Falcons, because with Matt Ryan still under contract, just think of the scenario. It's a perfect way to groom him for a year, let Matt Ryan stay for a year or two, whatever it may be, and then and have Justin Fields learn under one of the greats and ultimately take over at some point, probably in the 2022 season.
Okay.
That's how I see it, and that's how I would do it. I don't think he's damaged himself enough, despite seeing him play really poorly personally at Indiana. Struggle a little bit last night, but he was so tough. It's like, dude, you forgive the kid. I don't see him falling past 4. I think he's got the skill set. He's just got to refine himself a lot more than he was at Ohio State.
Fair assessment. Very fair assessment. The only thing that I would challenge is, you know, I do think he could slip past 4 in this scenario. You got Lawrence going one. If the Jets stand pat at two and they draft Penny Sewell or maybe a receiver, but I don't think they would do, and we'll get to him in a moment. But if they take Sewell from Oregon, the big tackle, and then you've got the Dolphins at three, you would imagine Devontae Smith would be paired up with his former teammate, Tua, if the Dolphins stick with Tua, all right? Could they draft Justin Fields? They could. But if the Dolphins take a receiver, then the Falcons could take Zach Wilson over Justin Fields. They could.
Good point.
And if that happens, then obviously, you know, you don't know where he lands. Maybe 12, maybe before that, maybe somebody scoots up. Listen, sometimes
Detroit at seven.
I mean, if they
Carolina at eight.
There's a Carolina.
Bunch. Yeah, there's a bunch of
them. No, there's options. There's no doubt. And listen, I really like the kid. I love his toughness. Mm-hmm. And I love his will to win and compete and steady leadership and skill set. I just wish he was a little more refined.
Yeah,
now,
me too.
Now, when you look at film, all right, and I spent 1 hour this morning watching film on Zach Wilson. I've watched a lot of stuff on him before, but I really watched it even more in depth today. And when you go into something with a preconceived notion, like anything in life, sometimes you watch it in a little bit of a skewed manner, to
fair. Yeah, you're looking for confirmation bias.
Correct. I like Zach Wilson more than Justin Fields. When I went into this, a little film session, whatever you want to call it, I really tried to check that bias at the door. Teak, I'm telling you. Now, this doesn't guarantee that Wilson's the better pro because who drafts him? What kind of O-line? Is he getting hit 50 times? Mm-hmm. Does he have weapons? Blah, blah, blah. Zach Wilson throwing the football, it is not even contestable.
That's right.
He is infinitely better than Justin Fields doing that.
Yeah.
And he's a good enough athlete, not like Fields, but he's a good enough athlete for me to absolutely justify taking Wilson over Fields. Right now, that's absolutely what I'm doing.
I think they're both projects, BT, to your point.
You think Wilson's a project?
Well, hold on. They're both projects because Wilson hasn't played against elite talent.
I don't see a project there, T. Go ahead.
And so
I don't see it.
Look, the transition is always hard from college to the end. It's always hard. But when you're going from smaller, independent-type football like BYU is playing into the NFL, it's a huge jump. Now, again, a lot of it's going to depend on where he gets drafted, to your point. That's the most valid point you can make. Because if you go somewhere that doesn't have a plan to develop you, you're screwed.
You're done.
You're done. And it doesn't matter if you were, you know, on, you know, fated to be a Hall of Famer. If you go to the wrong team, you're done. But that's a minor concern because you catch up quickly. Now he may struggle for, I don't know, say he's an immediate starter. He's struggling for 6 weeks. Eventually, he's got the skill and the knowledge because he played for a long time. He started as a freshman. He's the youngest starter in BYU history, Zach Wilson. So
he had some injuries, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, so his shoulder, hurt his hand.
Yep, so he's gone through some adversity. Yep. He's been around for a long time.
I'm
not worried about him other than catching up to the speed.
I love him.
With Fields, it's more – you got to learn all these things. You take every sign from the sideline, right? You get up to the line of scrimmage. We're going fast, but you stop and you look and you like tell me what to do and what play to call. It's a whole different, you know, machination in the NFL.
And there's no guarantee that you master that aspect.
That's right.
You'll catch up to the speed, to your point.
Yep.
And by the way, and I hear you. You know, Wilson didn't play really. He played Utah a couple times when they did USC, whatever, over the past couple of years. But he's also throwing to guys who aren't playing in the NFL.
That's a good point.
And you got to factor that in.
Yeah.
So he's going against corners who aren't probably going to be in the NFL. But none of his receivers are really going. Real quickly, I want you to handle this on Devontae Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, that one catch he made on the sideline was just out of this world. It was poetry.
It was an NFL catch, man.
It was beautiful. It was an NFL catch, but there's only a handful of NFL guys who are making that catch.
That's a good point.
But I love him. I love him. But at 175 pounds?
Yeah, you're worried.
Can you draft him number two? Number two.
Probably not. But when you're looking for a difference maker, and he's a difference maker, and he's such a smooth athlete and a great route runner. Mm-hmm. You can move him everywhere. In fact, he's been – just in that game alone, he was lined up outside. He was lined up in the slot. In fact, the spike route that he ran through the middle of the field, he was in the slot, like the inside slot.
What, the one on the linebacker you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. By the way, this is why Sark is a genius. And, like, I don't know where this came from in Sark because he was – I mean, he's – best was like 7, 8, 9, maybe 7 and 6 at Washington and then at USC. I don't know. I don't know where this came from out of Sark, but he's all of a sudden this offensive genius who can manipulate, you know, matchups in college football. We'll see what he does at Texas, but I mean, he saw that, and you saw him setting it up. You move Devontae Smith from one side to the other, then you move him down a slot, and you put him on the inside. Guess you got the matchup, and all of a sudden you got a touchdown. Like, he manufactures touchdowns. Mm-hmm. That's an aside on Sark. With Devontae Smith, I would take him, though, BT.
At two.
He just feels like
– At two?
Yes. It just feels like he's not a liability. Nobody is can't
far
miss.
Far from it.
Nobody is can't miss.
Superstar.
I know we were talking about this last night. Nobody is can't miss, right? But he's not a liability in any way. He's not an egomaniac.
No.
He's not. He works his ass off. He is reliable.
No maintenance.
He catches everything.
He does.
I mean, he's tough. He's the best receiver in this draft. Size-wise, you would say it's probably Jamar Chase from LSU, who sat out the season. But, I mean, production and accountability, it's Devontae Smith.
Okay. The only reason why I'd be reluctant to take him at two is because there's so many holes for the team drafting at number two.
Yeah, for you, the Jets.
But the team drafting number three?
Yeah.
If you have determined that two is your guy,
yeah,
then I'm taking him number three.
There's no doubt about it, BC.
He is incredible, that young man. We're
too early for mock drafts, but you had the right one. I don't know if it was on our Slack channel or we were texting this back and forth. If you're the Jets, get the hell out of two. Go to five.
Yeah.
Get some draft
Cincinnati,
equity.
Cincinnati, get them up there. They can take Sewell. Yep.
Get some draft equity and then take one of these studs. If you're going to stick with Darnold, take one of these stud receivers at five and get draft equity.
I'm down to trade. I've been saying it for months. I'll tell you, this is going to be a fun draft process.
There's a lot of good players.
Yes, there
really
are.
A whole lot of good, diverse good players.
And lot of great players who didn't play this year. You mentioned Chase Parsons from Penn State, Sewell from Oregon. There's a lot to really evaluate, and you and I love getting in the trenches and doing this stuff. So in terms of the draft stuff, you know Tiki and Tierney's going to get you back. We always do. I don't know if we'll be at the draft this year. We were supposed to go a year ago. God willing, things work out. We're there.
Yep. Is it going to be in Vegas, the dates?
No, it's in Cleveland.
Oh, it's in Cleveland.
It's in
Cleveland.
I think they're doing Vegas the year after.
That's right.
Because they already committed to Cleveland.
Yep.
And they said, you know, Vegas, we'll take care of you. We'll get you back. But we already booked up Cleveland. But it is going to be a fun draft evaluation. Last night was a little foreshadow of some of the star talent that we'll be talking about pretty much every week for sure here on Teak and Tierney. Teak, let's get the update from our guy, Rich Ackerman. Come back, hit you with inbounds, out of bounds. Kyrie Irving and 4 Eastern, still not showing up. Now he's out partying. Hey, Nets, I mean, you going to speak at all, Nets? Yeah. I mean, do you care? We'll get to that coming up after Axe update, which is right now. Inbounds, out of bounds, coming up in a moment. A little Kyrie, top of the hour. That's a circus for the Nets already. That didn't take too long, huh? First up, though, time for the Player of the Week, brought to you by Granger. Taking a look at the one who got it done this week, C.J. McCollum of the Blazers. Their guard knocked down the game winner with 9 ticks to go last night against Toronto. 112-111 was the final. McCollum dropped in 30 to continue his streak of at least 20 points in every game this season. So Portland now 6-4, 5 seed. It's obviously early for seeding, but give you a sense of where they are. The Raptors 2-8. They're tied with Detroit for the worst record in the East and the worst record in the NBA. Raptors are really having a rough time. Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. For all the ones who get it done, Granger offers supplies and solutions for every industry backed by 24/7 support and access to product specialists and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call clickgranger.com/safety or just stop on by. Stop on by. All right, appreciate you stopping on by with us here, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Twitter at Tiki and Tierney. You want to jump in on some of the football conversation to start? Where you would draft Fields? Where would you draft Devontae Smith? Can you justify taking a wide receiver? A smallish, granted a great one, but a smallish one at number two. We had a good discussion. We'd love to get your thoughts on Twitter at Tiki and Tierney. We'll get to the Kyrie Irving Nets situation, which took a twist today. Top of the hour, but right now a little inbounds, out of bounds. Tiki, you ready?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right, what's wrong, and who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right, here we go. So the Bills finally ended their 25-year playoff drought. They beat the Colts 27-24 on Saturday. Good game. Quarterback Josh Allen's a rising star in Buffalo, as we know. And fans have turned him into a cult hero. For a multitude of reasons. Remember, they donated to his grandmother's, or in his grandmother's name, to the Children's Hospital. He's really connected up there, which is awesome. Now the third-year quarterback's going all in with Bills Mafia, which could be dangerous. Making a Super Bowl promise with our buddy Adam Schein.
Last year at this time when we interviewed you, you said Buffalo wins a Super Bowl, you're jumping through a table. So just to confirm, about 365 days later, Buffalo wins a Super Bowl, Josh Allen is jumping through a table.
Tables, plural.
Tables.
Light them on fire. And light them on fire, too. Let's do it.
Okay, so by the way, and listen, you know, we know Schein forever. We love him. There was never a win. Now, Schein's been pushing this for a long time, to his credit. And I think a lot of it is because he went to Syracuse, which isn't too far from Buffalo. He's been riding that train. I get it, but he's been backing Josh Allen for a long time. And he's been, you know, last year he was doing this whole bit where if they made the playoffs, whatever, he was going to jump through a table. It for a guy who talked about jumping through a table every day on his shows, plural, it was the wimpiest jump through a table that I've ever seen. I mean, it was half-hearted.
I didn't see it.
Oh, it was horrendous. I mean, and I told him that. I'm like, come on, man, what was that? So here we are about maybe Josh Allen will be better than Schein jumping into a table. I think he would be. It would be impossible for Allen to make good on the promise to irresponsible to jump through that table, a burning table, no less.
I would say out of bounds. I don't think it's irresponsible, BT, because it's controlled. I mean, you make sure that you have the good men and women of the fire department up at Buffalo to do a controlled jump at a table with a fire suit on. He'll be perfectly fine. It's just a table.
Yep.
They do it at WWE all the time. Plus, it would, I mean, talk about really endear him with Buffalo faithful for life.
Uh-huh.
Talk about the Doug Peterson, Nick Foles statue outside of Lincoln Financial Field. If the Bills win a Super Bowl and Josh Allen is, say, the Super Bowl MVP, and then he jumped through the table, a burning table, forget it, dude. I mean, he's legendary.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jim Nance and Tony Romo. Welcome to Josh Allen Stadium as the Buffalo Bills battle. I mean, they would just name the stadium after him.
You'd That's right.
To. Not irresponsible. Some might argue it would be a waste of tax dollars to have the fire department go to the
outside.
I'm kind of teasing, but big deal. You rig it like the WWE, like Tiki said. You know, if God forbid, you know, his clothes catch on fire, you shoot him down. I mean, this would be amazing. The connectivity to Bill's Mafia is already incredibly strong. This would be legendary. And we'll see if he does it.
Are you in or are you out?
Well, I should say we'll see if they win, because
yes,
there's
exactly.
No doubt. If you just know, if they win, Josh Allen is doing that. All right, Teak, the Bears have a lot of questions to answer around the quarterback spot, most notably whether or not to bring back Mitchell Trubisky. However, whoever's under center next season could lose a key weapon after free agent wideout Allen Robinson indicated he could bounce from the Bears.
Right now, everything is pretty much on the table. Again, so, I mean, I've created a lot of relationships and everything like that here, but from my standpoint, I personally feel like we had an opportunity, you know, to be able to get something done, you know, over the past over 365 days now. So, you know, I'm not going to let that really affect me too much, you know, as far as however things play out.
I'm not going to let it affect me except when it's time to actually sign
exactly.
something. I'm going to say, you guys held out for a year and I'm signing somewhere else.
It sounds like you're already affected. Just saying.
So, yeah, I hear you. So while not a household name, although if you know football, he actually is. He's terrific.
Yeah.
Robinson, 200 catches for 2,400 yards the past two seasons. He's been flat-out balling with very inferior quarterback play in spurts, for sure. And really not other great receivers to, you know, avoid him from being double-teamed. He doesn't have much around him.
Nope.
Keeping Robinson should be the Bears' number one priority over what to do at the quarterback position. In or out?
I'm going to say inbounds of that. I think if they can find him position to draft a quarterback, that will take care of itself. Otherwise, I mean, we said this yesterday, BT. I'm not get rid of Mitch Trubisky. He's garbage and he's not serviceable. I think he's an okay quarterback, but I think you got to keep your playmakers when you have them. And I was trying to find their cap situation, but I can't pull it up right now. But I'm sure they have room. If they have room, he should be the priority.
Do they have a ton of room that, you know, Khalil Mack?
It won't pop up for me for whatever reason. The cap is not loading for whatever reason.
Gotcha.
But, if they have cap space, so I'll just put it out there as a condition. If they have cap space, I think Allen Robinson is definitely someone you need to hold on to. Because, yes, you could bring in someone else, but you don't know that it's going to be guaranteed production like Allen Robinson has put over the last couple of years.
Yeah, there's some really good receivers that could be available here. He's one of them. Galladay from Detroit. Chris Godwin from Tampa, Juju Smith-Schuster, if that floats you.
Yep.
You know, there's players out there who are going to get banked and who are going to make a difference. I'm going to say keeping him should not be the number one priority, though I would like – well, I actually don't want to see him because I want to see him come to my team, to be totally honest with you. But to be fair to the Bears, I think they've got bigger issues than what to do with Allen Robinson.
Yeah, by the way, they're dead cap space, man. They're dead. They're already negative.
All right.
Forget
it. You're going to have to get creative there. I'm not sure if you have the right GM. I'm not sure if you have the right head coach. I'm not sure if you have the right quarterback. So under those circumstances, how could anybody say that maintaining or retaining your free agent wide receiver, though a star, should take precedence over everything? I'm not saying that you should let him go. You should do everything in your power to sign him and retain him. But I think there's other pressing issues that will ultimately determine the position of their franchise and the direction more directly than a wide receiver right now. They got a lot of holes they got to fill.
Are you in or are you out?
The Wizards beat the Suns last night, picking up their third win of the season, despite Bradley Beal leading the NBA in scoring. As we know, Russell Westbrook's on ice. All right, he's a little bit banged up, and he's played well when he's been healthy. He's got the triple-double average, but he's a little bit banged up right now. Now the Ringer's reporting that Coach Scotty Brooks is firmly, that's the word they use, on the hot seat. After going one, I thought Scotty would do a better job there, to be fair. I thought that was a decent hire. He has not gotten it done. He's 152 and 177. Mm. It's been four-plus seasons with the Wizards, two playoff appearances in or out. He's also had some injuries, et cetera. It is time for the Wizards to move on from Brooks.
I'm going to say inbounds, BT. But to me, it's less kind of about Scott Brooks. I know what his reputation is, but he was dealt a horrendous deck of cards. With the John Wall injury, and then they never really reloaded big man wise. We talked about this last year as well. He's had inferior talent, so you can't really coach around that. But I do think it's a time for a resetting of everything there. So I'm going to say inbounds.
Yeah, I mean, this one is tricky. I know he hasn't done a very good job, obviously. I just gave the record. So based on that, it's probably time for the Wizards to move on. Firing a coach during a pandemic when there's nightly shutdowns, and we'll get into this a little bit later more thoroughly. Every night there's games canceled. The NBA has a very, very much a problem on their plates right now. It's growing by the day. I don't know what that would solve. How much practice time you really get, and how many games you get to really, truly play. He's not the answer, but I don't know if firing him solves anything. So I'll leave it there. All right.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
You know, Tiki, I watched, and I really don't do this too often. I went back and I watched the Kyrie Irving segment from last week on this show. And I watched it by myself, solitude. I said, I want to see if I was too hard on, if I was unfair in what I projected. And I walked away comfortable, certainly, with what I said. Even more so now, where are the Nets? Where is Kyrie? And how does this end? My guess is not good, but that's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.